We have everybody on board. Just for housekeeping measures, I want to do a couple things. One, everybody be aware, I am recording this. So just so you're aware. Two, I would like to go down the roll call for the record, because even though Zoom keeps a rather good record, it does not identify who's on video. And it doesn't keep a record of the participant count. So just going to run down the list here. From the city of Medford, we have Carl McNair, correct?
Here.
Okay. From Oregon DOT, Natalie Lilienwall. Natalie?
Here.
Hi. Mike Baker.
I'm here.
I am here.
Ian Horlacher. USEPA, Adam Clark.
Here.
From Federal Highway Administration, Ben Haynes. You're muted.
Yeah, I'm here. There.
Okay. Jasmine Harris.
Right here. Hi, folks.
From Federal Transit Administration, Jeremy Borrego.
I'm here. Thanks, Carl.
Thank you. Oregon DEQ, Morgan intended to be here, but she sent me an email yesterday stating that she had a conflict. I told her I would send her a recording of the meeting so that she could get everyone's input. From the COG, it's myself and Ryan McLaren. Ryan, say hi.
Hello, everyone.
And from Trinity Consultants, the consulting team that's helping us with the Moves modeling, Tom Carlson.
Hello, everyone. And I'm joined by my colleague, John Snowberger.
Correct.
I am here as well.
Okay. Thank you. Now that we have everybody on board, I'm going to share my screen here. Here it is. Here's the agenda. Everybody see that?
Yep.
Okay. So the very first order of business is the Medford Build Project. Analysis has been performed. TPAL ran the transportation model. The outputs from that, based on our December 16th meeting, were fed into the MOVES model. Tom Carlson was in charge of that. I'm getting ahead of myself. Purpose of analysis. The analysis is to identify whether the Medford Build Project trips us over our budget. It does not. Anticipated adoption timeline. I'm hoping to adopt the amendment to the 2017-2042 RTP and the 21-24 TIP next month in March 23rd. So that is the anticipated timeline. That's the reason we did the analysis. We sent out a draft of the document to everybody. Tom, do you want to do just a brief summary of results?
I'd be happy to, Carl. As the AQCD draft that Carl mentioned was circulated to you, the essence is in the synopsis section up front on page little Roman numeral 3. There's a comparison of the revised emission estimates with the addition of the Medford Build Project. And then, as consistent with past conformity analyses for the transportation plans, both with and without the transit service scenarios. And you can all see there for all applicable analysis years, the emissions, which include both exhaust and brake and tire wear, PM10, as well as fugitive road dust, are still well below the budgets. As the rest of the document explains, we're really only doing quantitative conformity determinations for PM10. As I'm sure most of you know, the area is in a limited maintenance plan phase for carbon monoxide. And one thing I will point out in advance for interested readers, if you've poured through the document, is there's a section in there, I believe it's on page 14, that includes a comparison of VMT for the analysis years that we put in there for two reasons. One, to demonstrate, as we talked about on the December interagency consultation call, that with this newer, nominally newer version of the travel demand model that TPAO used and couldn't go back to the older one that was used for the original RTP conformity analysis, that when we ran the new version for the base year, we got the exact same VMT, and I confirmed that the speed outputs were also the same. So that table serves that purpose, as well as giving you all a perspective of what the change in regional VMT within the applicable planning area looked like by adding this project. And as we talked about, I think, a little bit on the last interagency call, we pointed out that in the horizon year of the plan, the effects of these improvements start to show up in ultimately shortening VMT as that portion of the planning area apparently reaches a level where there's more trips diverted onto what would be a shorter corridor. And we walked through that, and I believe Jen Wren from TPAO had some information that explains that. For the really interested readers, if you took the time to compare this draft to the original 2042 RTP AQCD, you would see, Carl, if you'll skim down to, I think it's page 23, table 11. If you looked carefully, you'd see that our emissions here for vehicle exhaust and brake and tire wear are about 20 tons per day or per year lower and don't match the relative change in the VMT that we'd showed earlier in that table. And as this table has a footnote in there, I said 20 tons, roughly 30. We discovered in doing some of the cross checks related to the ME travel model versions that there had been an inadvertent error in the moves work for the original AQCD as it related to calculating the speed distribution inputs. So we found and fixed those. Materially, it doesn't affect anything related to making a conformity finding with respect to the budgets. But if people wondered why these numbers went down for vehicle exhaust more than they should have, that was the reason. Then there's a section of material that follows that we do all of the documentation related to the fugitive road dust calculations. And then big picture in this planning area, as you can see, as Carl scrolls toward the end, the fugitive dust emissions are actually notably larger than the exhaust and brake and tire wear emissions. And they're pretty much, as I think most of you know, driven by VMT and then silt loading data that exists for that area. So that was all I was going to kind of walk through, unless there were specific questions.
Did anybody have questions on the tables contained in the document? The results?
Yeah, Tom and Carl, this is Ben Haynes, Federal Highway Administration. Having a look at that table 11, I just was curious if you could touch on the differences between the model years 2017 to 2027, and then 27 to 37, and then 37 to 42, looking at the total PM10 with transit numbers. Well, and also without transit, I noticed there's a pretty significant decrease in the PM10 emissions between 2017 and 2027, almost a 50 unit drop, and then a very slight increase in the 10-year period from 27 to 37, basically a 2-unit increase. And then for the 5-year period between 37 and 42, we have a 8-point increase in total PM10 tons per year. And I'm just curious if there's an explanation for kind of the erratic differences.
No, it's a very good question, Ben. And the short answer that we can unwrap as necessary is, and you can see evidence of this when you compare exhaust emissions to the road dust emissions. They're not solely driven by VMT. What's working is the effects of the ongoing federal motor vehicle control program, where generally speaking, as new vehicles are certified for use, they have to meet tighter and tighter new vehicle emission standards that over the last decade and a half have also had expanded durability standards. So what's going on in here between 2017 and 2027 is you see what are more significant effects from the last batch of vehicle emission standards for both light and heavy duty vehicles affecting exhaust PM10 that EPA has promulgated that tend to taper off after 2027, where you see the effects of the VMT changes between the analysis years beginning to take over.
Tom, if I could ask a question and maybe interject, this is Carl. Those standards are baked into the MOVES model, correct? It's a default assumption of the model itself, correct?
Almost correct. In the case of the work that we do here for this part of Oregon, and we'll touch back on this in the next agenda item when we talk about input modeling assumptions for the 2045 RTP. Since Oregon has adopted the California vehicle standards that largely affect the stringency of light duty vehicle emissions, there's a mechanism within the EPA MOVES model, and Adam, you may want to speak to this if you'd like as well, where EPA has set up the ability to load in the effects of adopting the California standards where applicable in other states who've done so, that sort of override the defaults that are more representative of the rest of the 49 states who haven't adopted those standards.
Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm.
Adam, anything you wish to add to that?
No, I don't have anything additional.
Okay.
I apologize. I'm a little bit lost because I don't have Zoom, but.
Oh, you do have the document, however, right? I sent that out to everybody.
Yeah, I have the document up in front of me.
Okay. So
I believe you're going over the tables and explaining the disparity between the projected models for future years. But I didn't have any notes on that section, so.
Okay.
Carl or
so
Tom,
any other questions? I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. Carl McNair, City of Medford. I have a question. This is all a little bit Greek to me, but I just wanted to kind of confirm the highlights that I took from what you guys said. And the main one is that the build project does not cause any problems for the air quality conformity, and in fact lowers VMT slightly in the future year. Is that correct?
Yeah, why don't we go back to that table? I think it's on page 14. The short answer to your question is yes, the analysis demonstrates that the emissions associated with adding the build project still stay well within the established budgets, and therefore finding of conformity with those budgets can be made. And then, as you noted, the effects of this project, at least the way the TPAL model works, and as an air pollution consultant, understand the world of travel demand modeling. And as I think Jin Ren from TPAL explained on the December call, this is consistent with sort of part of the purpose of the project to ultimately provide a means for some diversion of trips that would be taking a more circuitous route when travel demand builds up over time into that horizon year of the plan.
Okay, great.
So I think we can assume from that, that Carl, in this particular case, instead of people going up 95 or I-5 to 62, cutting up there to go into 140, they're taking North Phoenix Foothills Road from 5 to 140.
Right, thus reducing a more direct route.
Correct.
Great. Thank you.
Carl, this is Jasmine with Federal Highways.
Yes.
Hi, Carl. I will admit that I didn't have very much time to review the document. There were a lot of materials that you sent, and I spent more time on the RTP spreadsheet list. I guess my bigger question was, and I may be confused with all the information I was digesting, is the 2017-2042 RTP AQCD is intended to include the build grant projects. And I heard earlier that this document is going to be adopted in March. Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah.
And I've got a couple things in my mind. One thing is, I didn't see anything on public involvement on this particular document. That's a question. But then also, I thought I read that the 2021-2045 RTP is scheduled for adoption in March?
April. We're going to go for April.
April, okay. So I guess the overarching question as I was going through it is, what's the rationale behind going through the 2017-2042, I guess amending the RTP versus adding the build grant projects to the 2021-2045 RTP and AQCD? If there's difference between March and April, unless I'm missing something.
Right. We will be doing that, but the whole purpose behind this was to allow Medford to maintain and move forward with the build grant itself. They can't do anything until the RTP and the TIP have been amended. And the current RTP is the 2017 to 2042 RTP. The current TIP is the 21 to 24 TIP. So what we hope to do in March is to adopt the AQCD for these two documents and then adopt the amendments to these two documents, thus allowing ODOT and Medford to move forward with the project. That project will also be incorporated into the new RTP.
So it's for efficiency reasons, just to sort of get the process
Yes, ODOT and Medford face a really tight timeline for this project. So the sooner we can get it amended and official, the better for them.
Okay.
This is Adam Clark at EPA. I have something to kind of follow up on Jasmine's point, because I thought her comment was good. I saw that the comment period was slated to occur from February 23rd to March 23rd, so it's forthcoming. Is that correct?
That's correct. However, we've posted this on the website, and we sent a press release to the papers.
Okay.
So Carl,
can you repeat that one more time? Adam, did you raise the public comment period? Did you say it was February 23rd through whatever that 21-day or 30 day is?
It's a 30-day. It's from February 23rd to March 23rd. Yeah, it's a 30-day current period. That's what I saw in the document anyway.
Yes, it's a 30-day time period, but we've already posted it on the website, and we're going to do an official release for everybody. We'll send it out to all the committees and everything. But, yeah, we've already put it up on the website for public review.
Carl, and is that time period for this AQCD document or for the...
It's for the AQCD, it's for the amendment to the TIP and the amendment to the RTP.
I see. So it's for the 2021-2045 RTP, 2017-2042, and the TIP.
No, no.
2021-2044.
It's for the 2017 to 2042 RTP amendment, the 2021 to 24 TIP amendment, and for the AQCD for both of those. This, the document we are reviewing right now, is the air quality conformity determination for both the 2017 to 42 RTP and the 21 to 24 TIP.
Maybe I can add something to help Jasmine, Tom Carlson, based on where I've seen something similar in other MPO work. This is kind of out of the ordinary, whereas Carl's explaining to allow downstream agencies to continue their work. The two of them have gotten almost overlapped, but with, you know, engaging the public through the review process. Typically a draft, I've seen in other areas, a draft AQCD will have sort of a shell like is in Appendix E of this document. And then during the public review, it gets filled in with more explicit information. Like Carl might add the complete set of interagency consultation dates in the section on page E-3. And then some of the outreach stuff could probably have information in there. And typically, Carl, sorry if I'm getting over my skis on this. You know, there's also anything that goes in there as it relates to public comment when you produce a final version.
Correct. There's a, at the end, description of public and agency participation. This will have additional information. And then there's a form that they can fill out or we can fill out as we receive comments. Typically what I've done, in the past is, you know, I sent you all that spreadsheet, for instance, for the RTP update that we're doing and hopefully adopting in April. I will come out with a spreadsheet showing everybody's comments. I will do the same for this and include it in the final document. Any comments received from the agencies will be placed in the spreadsheet. I'll make sure you see it before we publish it, but I will incorporate all the comments we've received.
Carl, and when is the policy board planning on adopting all of these documents? You said it was in March. Is it after March 23rd?
March 23rd. That's when we're going to have the public hearing.
I see. And that's the day of the policy board meeting, March 23rd.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Hey, Carl, this is Jeremy at FTA. I just, since you're throwing out all the horizon year dates, I hadn't really noticed that about this air quality conformity determination, that it's the 2017-2042 RTP, a different horizon year for the TIP. Or is your RTP in a grace period right now? Is that why it's a different horizon?
No, we are in the middle of updating the RTP, but that won't be adopted until the following month. So if I understand federal regs correctly, we must amend and do an AQCD on the existing document, the existing plan, the current plan. The current plan is the 2017 to 2042 RTP. So for this project to get into the current TIP, we have to amend the current RTP. It'll also be included in the update, but the whole reason behind trying to get this done as soon as possible is so that ODOT and Medford can move forward with the project.
When was the 2017 RTP adopted?
I believe it was in early 2017.
So you have 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020 in the STIP for that RTP then, right?
2021.
Okay,
21
so you're
counting.
Okay.
The RTP is.
Okay. I just want to double check
the first
that.
Year doesn't end until,
Okay.
Thank the whole year. Yes, and I realize this is confusing because we're going to be updating the RTP immediately after this with an AQCD for that as well. However, again, the build project is on a really tight timeline, and we're trying to grease the wheels as much as possible to keep it moving forward.
Carl, and I, go ahead, Jeremy.
No, go ahead, Jasmine.
I was going to say, I'm trying to think of the federal regulation or why the 2017-2042 would have to be AQCD'd if the 2021-2045 is scheduled to be adopted so soon. I just don't understand why
this... Again. The build project is under a really tight timeline. 1 month makes a really big difference. So if we can get all this approved in March, they can do some stuff between March and April. That's the whole point behind this. Otherwise, we would have waited and just done the 2021 to 2045 RTP.
I hear you on that, Carl. And that's actually, I was going to ask a similar question to that. You keep saying it's a tight timeline. Can someone give us a sense of that timeline? What's driving the schedule right
Justin,
now?
Justin, you're online. Justin, you're on the line, right?
Yeah, I'm here. So currently I can't amend
this. Justin Shoemaker. Oh, God.
Hello.
Go everybody. Ahead, Justin. Sorry.
So we're trying to, we just applied for a rescission and our construction obligation date that we are aiming for is February of 22 for obligation. But currently with our project, how it sits, we are not able to amend the STIP to put the proper amount of PE in place, de-obligate right away phase to make it all local dollars and to move the other funding around into the construction phase until that we get this documentation in place. And so that itself is a multi-month process. So without having this in the MTIP or STIP, I can't enter into an IGA with Federal Highways for the build grant funding itself. So every day counts in our books right now.
Okay, thank you. I didn't have any additional, this is Jeremy from FTA again. I didn't have any additional comments other than the ones that have been expressed, I think already by FHWA and EPA. I did have one on the table at the end. It's relatively minor, but I just wanted to get some clarification on, and if you'll forgive me, my computer's loading right now.
Page 28, the comparison of total motor vehicle PM10 emissions to applicable emissions budgets?
No, not that. It's C2 in the table. And I just wanted to make sure, yes, it's the project segments contained in Medford's build grant, Appendix C.
Oh, yes. Okay, sorry.
So I want to make sure I understand these hazards that are being exempted under safety features. So I want to get a sense, because you didn't specify for both MED-011 and MED-012. The first one, you explained the exemption, but I'm not familiar with the area and I'm not familiar with the hazards. So if someone could just go through those two and explain the exemption a little bit, that would be helpful for me.
Well, I put in the exemption. So for 1-1, and Carl, you can correct me if I'm wrong. One of the things they're doing is they're adding turn lanes to move turning traffic out of the way of the through traffic, which is my understanding of federal regs, that is a safety exception. And they're looking at either a roundabout or signal to help with traffic calming or traffic control. Is that correct, Carl? Foothill Road at Delta Waters?
So Foothill Road at Delta Waters will not be signalized or have a roundabout. We did a warrant analysis and it's not needed at this time. So it's just the turn lanes that are being added with the project.
Okay. Correct that. Timing is everything, but okay. So by adding turn lanes, however, under the guidelines, I believe it's, it is 126 table 2 safety, by adding turn lanes, you're removing or eliminating a safety hazard. Another example, you also mentioned, what was the other one? 12. Again, intersection control improvements such as right in, right out. Again, safety analysis, that's the major issue. And what they're trying to do is modify that particular intersection due to safety concerns, which again is 126 table 2 safety. That was my interpretation.
That's within an existing right of way, is that correct?
I believe so, right, Carl?
Yes, Foothill and Lone Pine is within existing right of way, and that will be building a concrete median between the travel lanes to make it right in, right out. So that's.
And just to make, I could try and bring it up, but just to let you know, that particular part of Foothills, there are two huge transformer stations along that road that they have to, they being the city and ODOT, try and accommodate as they make modifications to this area. So hold on, I'm trying to. Bringing it up on Google Earth here and see if I can show you a picture of that so you can see what we're talking about. And that didn't come up right. That's not Foothill Road. There's Foothill Road. Okay. Oh, yeah. In fact, that is not the area. Anyway. And back to where we were, let me see. I'll look that up. The other one, and you didn't bring it up, but it's another thing that's going on Foothills Road. The very first one, that's Jackson County, Foothill Road, Delta Waters to Dry Creek. What they're trying to do is eliminate, they're trying to flatten the hills and straighten to whatever degree they can, straighten out the curves, and where needed, add turn lanes. All of these are to eliminate hazardous situations. We have a lot of what you call pop-up hills. You can't see the vehicles coming from the other side until you're at the top of the hill. And you have a lot of blind curves, which with driveways. So they're trying to eliminate safety hazards of people pulling out of the driveway into a blind curve and getting smacked and that kind of thing. Almost all of these are for safety, except for the non-exempt, which you're adding capacity, and capacity addition are not exempt.
Okay, thank you. That answers my questions.
Carl. Go ahead, Natalie.
Yeah, this is Natalie. I just wanted to verify that when you're adding a turn lane and it goes through an intersection, it's been my practice that that's called an intersection channelization project, and that it would be...
Actually, channelization projects are if you're channeling the traffic into the intersection. I do believe that's correct. Carl, you're the traffic engineer. Carl?
Yeah, I guess when I hear channelization, I would think of adding like a median to prevent, say, a driveway that's close to the intersection from being able to turn into it or out of that across traffic. But I'm not familiar with the definitions that are would be.
We'll see if we can come up with one. I get what you're saying, Jasmine, but I do believe channelization, and I will try and find a definition. We can send it out there. I'm sure it's under the a UCMD, maybe, but it's to channel the traffic. And again, I think it's coming into an intersection. So you're channeling them into the through lanes, any right turn lanes, and any left turn lanes. If you're adding a left turn lane, that I guess could be considered a channelization, but more often than not, it's done to eliminate a safety hazard, which are rear end accidents.
So that was my question. It was at the intersections of all these projects, if there was indeed a brand new turning lane. I don't know which Carl can answer that.
Yes. Yes. So we will be, I guess, actually not all of them. So. Lone Pine Road, there will be no left turn lane because we're making it a right in, right out, but all the other intersections will have left turn lanes installed at them if they don't have them already, which I think it's just, the list is gone, but I think the Hillcrest Road.
I just wanted to show.
Already has turn lanes. McAndrews Road already has turn lanes. Delta Waters does not. Go ahead, Carl.
So if you can see, is the Google Earth showing up on the screen?
Yeah, we can see it, Carl.
Okay, so this is Foothills Road, if you can follow my cursor, basically running north and south here. These are the two huge transformer farms, and this is Lone Pine Road. And one of the things they're doing is there's going to be a bike path along Foothills, but to save, for safety reasons, they're going to bring the bike path around this way back into McAndrews, and Lone Pine Road right here is going to be right turn only. Right now you can turn left, but this is a hill. The southern approach coming up from the south, that's a hill. That's one of the pop-up type hills. And Lone Pine is just before the crest of that hill. So if you're trying to turn left from Lone Pine Road, it's really difficult to see any cars coming through that transformer station, and you really have to accelerate because the people coming up the hill are punching it to get up the hill. So they're going to make that a right turn only. And no left into there either, right, Carl?
Yeah, that's correct.
And that's to eliminate an existing safety hazard that would only be magnified by increasing the flow of traffic through all the improvements they're making.
So this is Natalie. Tom, in your experience, have you called a turn lane, a new turn lane at an intersection channelization?
To be completely honest, Natalie, I was following as best I could with your question. And while Carl was going to the Google Maps, I actually went to Wikipedia, that wonderful source. And then I found some TRB material. And I'm catching up on learning. I've never had this experience before, but I think what Carl mentioned, where it basically involves separation or regulation of conflicting traffic movements, you know, in this case, due to safety concerns, into defined paths, like a dedicated or a median enhanced right turn lane or a dedicated left turn lane, is consistent with what I've seen in just looking online. I've not dealt with this in discerning, you know, that part of 40 CFR 93, but it seems to be consistent with what I pulled up quickly as we've had this
discussion. So that, yeah, what you're saying is what I'm saying as well. If there's a dedicated turn lane that wasn't there before, and I've noticed that in the spreadsheet that you, a lot of projects, my question is, are they adding a new dedicated turn lane when they're saying they're adding the center lane for turning? And it just means it goes from being 126 to 127. So it's not like it's going to change anything in the TIP or the RTP. It just means you address it in project level conformity. And for the build projects, I have our project level conformity is done. We've already completed that. So it's not changing that either.
So it appears to also, just to follow up briefly, Natalie, it can be simply just the use of pavement markings. It doesn't have to involve islands as well. And again, right. I'm just looking at this for the first time at this level of detail. So
okay.
Good question.
So I do think that needs to be changed to 127.
Channelization. I'm sorry?
if a new dedicated turn lane is at any intersection in these separated project pieces, it should be called out as a exempt 93-127.
Channelization, intersection, yes. Channelization, is that what you're...
Yes.
Okay.
If it has nothing else going on, like a signal.
So that would be for Delta Waters Road. Would be the one that would apply to.
Okay. Thank you.
We will make that modification. Thank you.
Carl, this is Ben, Federal Highway Administration. This discussion has been great, and it brings up another question that Jasmine and I had sent to you regarding projects that exhibit multiple exemptions. When a project exhibits multiple exemptions, how does the MPO ensure consistent application of the exempt status within the member jurisdictions? Another example of this, we can talk about when we get to the 21 to 45 RTP, but there are projects that are listed as exempt under safety, but it appears that it could fall under multiple other exemptions like air quality, bike ped improvements, or in the case that we just discussed for the Medford 011 project, and intersection channelization exemption. So can you kind of address that a little bit with the MPO and how they apply these exemptions and how that's the...
Well, none of the jurisdictions do that. We do it here at staff level, looking at what we, you know, the two tables, the 126 and 127. And I did read through what Jasmine had sent, and I recognize there are some where I did not recognize it was the same project, and it was the description that threw me. So, but we can get to that when we're talking about the 21 to 45 RTP. I just want, if I could, I'd like to make sure that we've addressed every issue for the 17 to 42 and the 21 to 24 AQCD so that I can move forward with, so far I've only received a comment right now, today, about the change, and that's for the Medford project, Foothill Road and Delta Waters Road. Is an exemption should be 93-127 table two, table three channelization. I will make that modification. Are there any other modifications or suggestions on these projects?
Yeah, copy that, Carl. I understand we can pick up that discussion when we get into the 21 to 45 RTP. I do have two additional questions related to this AQCD draft and the table presented here. Both of them have to do with Medford 037, that last project at the bottom. One of them is directly in this AQCD document. I noticed that looking at the map that's associated with the build project segments, that particular section of road, South Stage Road to 1,000 feet west, appears to be outside the city of Medford limits. And so I'm just wondering about the assignment of that project to the Medford jurisdiction. Is that actually a Medford project?
Carl?
Yeah, I can address that if you want, Carl. So it's outside our city limits, but it's within our urban growth boundary. And so that is a city of Medford project. The area is currently going through the annexation process. I'm not sure if that has been approved yet.
Okay, thank you. And then at risk of poking your ire, Mr. Wilson-Bach, a question about Medford 037. And I'm not trying to dive into the 21 to 45 RTP yet, but I noticed that 037 project is not included in the 21 to 45 RTP table. And I'll leave it there.
Yeah, that was an oversight. We went back and forth several times. We're going to double check and make sure that all of these, so it'll be listed. I can guarantee you right now, it is already in the model, the very same model we're going to use for the 21 to 45 RTP. It's already in there. We've done the check and the double check with T-PAL on that. What happened was we had some confusion. Originally, it was identified wrong, then it was mapped wrong. We will have it accurately reflected in the RTP list that we revise and send out probably to everybody next week.
Okay, thank you.
Sure enough. Anything else on the 17 to 42 or 21 to 24 AQCD? Cool.
Carl, this is Jasmine.
Yes.
Are you asking for the rest of the interagency consultation members for written comments?
Yes. I was hoping I would receive some. So far, I've only received them from you.
And it probably would not hurt to send reminders. There is a lot of material to go through and several topics and different RTPs all at the same time.
I recognize that. Okay, yeah, that won't be a problem. I'll send out a reminder. I was kind of hoping the precedent would be the document, the AQCD. The project list, I intend to walk through one at a time with all of you, because as you noticed in your noted in your comments, I have some questions about what I should be doing on some of them. That's why I put the question marks in there. So anyway, yes, I will send out a reminder after this meeting, see if I can get any comments from any of the agencies regarding the AQCD, the draft document for the 2017 to 2042 RTP and 21 to 24 TIP. But
very good. And Carl, now, just sort of an overall comment regarding that document, I would just encourage you to kind of go through it. I know that you're sort of, it's like the same document that you update often, and it's easy to miss years and dates, and just take a look at it. There seems to be some wrong tip years, and it just seems like there's stuff that needs to be updated, time frames.
Yeah, I saw your comments. I will definitely do that.
Carl.
Oh, and your question about the USDOT letters, I have them on file, but whenever I bring them up, the signatures don't appear. I don't know why that happens. They're in the electronic file, but the signatures never appear.
You didn't know we used disappearing ink, Carl?
Yeah. I thought there might be a time constraint. I wasn't sure. But seriously, the only ones I found, and, you know, they came in on at the time, and I think I mentioned it in the AQCD, but none of the ones I have signatures. It's when you bring it up, it's one of those coded PDFs.
That seems,
have a discussion.
Yeah, I was going to say that seems pretty odd to me. I know when these PDF documents are digitally signed, it normally holds that certificate with the document, so it's pretty tough to remove signatures without corrupting it.
Yeah, I don't think they're removed. We can have this discussion after. I can give you and Jasmine a call Monday or Tuesday. I'll take a screenshot and send them to you, because at the top of the PDF, there's this bar that tells me it's a coded document of some kind, which I don't. I only see it from the feds. I don't see it from anybody else. So maybe it's because it's coded, the signature's there, but I don't know what the code is. But we can talk about that next week. I'm probably ignorant as to what's going on with the PDF. That's very possible.
Carl, this is Natalie. I just have one small question about on page III, under actions taken, I noticed.
Hold on, let me get there.
Okay. So at the bottom of the page, under action taken.
Okay.
I don't see ODQ on the list of people conferring.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, we need to add that. And that's probably one of the things that Jasmine was referring to. That should be the 21 to 24 tip.
Sure was.
That was all.
Okay, thank you. Moving on. So now we have the RTP update. The pre-analysis moves inputs. Did I include it in this version? I did not include it in this version. Hold on. It was in the original version I sent out. Hold on. Too many files open. them on.
Tom, can you send those modeling files my way?
The ones from the work on the amended RTP?
Yes.
Yeah, there. We put a note in the AQCD that they can be dumped to a CD or a DVD, or I can provide a secure FTP link that you can download them from, and CC Carl on it. And if anybody else would like them as well, Adam, for example, you know, just let me know.
FTP would.
Okay, so the first question we had for the upcoming 21 to 45 RTP is the inputs issue. This was included in the original agenda I sent out. It is, Tom, is it any different than what we did for the last one, other than the models?
I think I put some, when I put this into a proposal to you, I'd shaded some of the rows, but I can kind of tick those out, because those are things that I think we need to ensure we focus on. And the first one is in the top row, maybe a little bit more trivial, but there's two versions of moves out. And Adam, if I'm misspeaking, please let me know. But under the guidance that EPA provided with the release of the moves 3 model that at least was posted in the Federal Register as of, I think, early January, if I recall, there, for conformity work, there still continues to be at least a year's grace period for the use of either model. The transition to MOVES 3 is much more accelerated for SIP work. So this is a question to the group as to a determination of which version of MOVES should be used. I can add some information, but it's not my role to tell you all which should be used. I've run both versions in another application outside of Oregon for a setup that's similar to how it's run on a regional inventory basis for conformity work. And I've seen for particulate emissions, this is PM2.5, I've seen numbers go down quite dramatically in MOVES 3. I've followed the release of the new model from what OTAC and other parts of EPA have provided. And I think what I have found is the fact that PM emissions tend to go down, but not universally in all areas, given fleet and ambient conditions. And so I don't think it's an issue from the perspective of one model having more difficulty to show emissions below the applicable budgets. I guess if I was asked for a recommendation, I would suggest that we use the new version of MOVES, because ultimately the grace period is going to end and the MPO will need to make a transition to using it. Given my experience so far, I can run it pretty much just as efficiently as MOVES 2014B. I don't know, Carl, if you want me to tick off the ones that I think are revisions or things that we need to have folks focus on, or stop here and let people discuss the version of the model.
Yeah, if we could just get some consensus, is it okay to use, well, I'm assuming it's okay to use the latest MOVES model.
It is. You have the discretion, at least as the guidance suggests, there's a grace period to use either model. But it should be determined, as we are all now here on the phone, under interagency consultation.
Right. So is there any objection to using the MOVES 3 model? Hearing none. Tom, back to you.
Okay. Thanks, Carl.
Just to clarify, wasn't there a discussion via email regarding this very topic and EPA weighed in? Or was that something different? It was while I was out.
Adam sent out an email regarding the availability of the new email, new MOVES model. And also, I believe in that email, Adam, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you reiterated what Tom just pointed out, that there is a one-year grace period. But I don't think there was any preference, was there?
I think when we met in December, we were discussing the traffic model being a different version.
And that's, yes, that's an issue we've already addressed. Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't know if Adam's still with us, which bothers me.
I don't see him on the participants list.
This is not good. Well, we're going to pretend he agrees with everything we say then. Okay, Tom, if you'd like to run down the... well, Natalie's here. She's familiar with the Moose model, right?
Yep.
I think she's run it once or twice. Just kidding. Okay, I'll try and I'll just kind of go through things where I think I can go quickly and then pause more where I think I need to. But if I've jumped over something too quickly, just yell at me to stop.
Really quick, this is Jasmine again. In the absence of Adam and EPA, would it be appropriate to email the question so that EPA can weigh in on the model?
What we just discussed about the version of the model here, the first row of the inputs outline.
Jasmine, do you want to email and copy us, or do you want me to email and copy you?
I think you could email the group and then specifically ask for EPA to weigh in. I think that'd be appropriate.
Okay.
I'd also like to say at DEQ, there's a person they have that is a moves expert that Wes no longer is doing that. So copying the group would probably be good because then Morgan can send it to James.
Okay. Natalie, did you say Wes isn't working anymore?
He's no longer doing air quality modeling.
Oh, okay. Yet. He got moved. Okay. Thanks. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Tom, do you want to take it?
Okay. So the next two elements, I think, are basically the same methodology that was in the previous AQCD conformity work and reflect the fact that there have been no changes to the methods to develop fugitive dust emissions and emission factors on paved and unpaved roads. Part of those involved having local information on silt loadings. I don't, in my opinion, believe that there's any need to gather additional data. The silt loading data that's been used, I think, in two RTP planning cycles now, I believe is still probably representative, but I'll defer to those of you who might have more local knowledge than I do, but I wasn't planning on digging for any additional silt loading data. Obviously, we're working on PM10, and then the analysis years, I'll stop at a little bit. To briefly paraphrase the applicable element of 40 CFR 93, the analysis years require you to obviously look at the base year, the horizon year, and then the intervening years have to be picked in a manner that there's no more than a 10-year separation for any of them between each of them and the two endpoints. And it's my interpretation then, given that the MPO and the interagency consultation process has some discretion. And if you look carefully, you see what we're proposing here is to do slightly different intermediate years than we analyzed for the amended 2042 RTP. 2025 and 2035 with the 2045 horizon year rather than 2027 and 2037. Carl and I have consulted on this a little bit, and we've proposed these two intermediate years because they better align with the short, mid, and long range categorizations of projects that the RTP planning process uses.
So, and that's the question to our federal partners in ODOT. Is this a fair I don't want to say accurate. Are we okay using these years as the model years? 2017 is the base. That's where we have the base data from. 2025 would be the end of the short term, 35 would be the midterm, and then 45 would be the horizon year for the RTP. They're all within the 10-year horizon, which is required under the federal regulations. So are we safe in assuming that these are valid model years?
That sounds fine, but didn't you have tables with 2027 in them?
Yeah, that was my same thought.
for the new RTP?
Oh, this isn't.
Yes,
We're old, the 2017.
This is the update. This is not the AQCD. This is the new RTP.
Okay.
So yes, the previous RTP had 2017, 27, 37, and 42. This is the new RTP. This is what we're proposing as the model years for the transportation model and then as inputs to the MOVES model. So 2017 is the base year. 2025 is the end of the short term, 35 the end of the middle term or mid-range, and 45 is the horizon year. They're all within the 10-year time span. We assume these are logical breaks for modeling.
To better align with the short, mid, and long-range transportation horizons.
Right.
Again, I don't have any comments, but I would feel more comfortable if EPA would be able to have the opportunity to weigh in, especially being that this is so technical.